The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Thanks to Richard Palmer for filling in on the program yesterday, freeing me up to take care of a few other things. I always have a stack of things piling up on the desk, so it was good to catch up on some other editorial projects. You can get to Richard's podcast at the trumpet.com website if you happen to miss that program. The day before yesterday, we talked a fair bit about the Trump derangement syndrome. Quite a few people listened in to that one, and this is the program following the uproar over the Helsinki press conference. That was Tuesday's show, so that too is available at the trumpet.com website, and we'll be looking at that more in just a moment here. But first, I just want to refer you back to something that President Trump said while he was in Europe. Now, you'll remember over the course of this 8 or 10 day trip that when he was in Europe, the uproar was over the fact that he was calling them out. And they're our allies. How could he do such a thing? How could he tell them that their unfair trade practices are hurting the United States? How could he insist that they should pay their fair share to NATO? And the media went on the attack. And they said that you can't treat our allies this way. You just can't do it. And they took exception in particular with this particular statement he made about Europe. Here's a reporter questioning him. And again, this was early on in his trip. Soundbite 17.
Who's your biggest competitor, your biggest foe globally right now?
Well, I think we have a lot of foes. I think the European Union is a foe, what they do to us in trade. Now, you wouldn't think of the European Union, but they're a foe.
Yesterday, the European Union announced that they would hit Google, the American company, with a record $5 billion fine. $5 billion. You know, in one of the news reports from President Trump's visit to Europe and his meetings with NATO member states, European leaders. Evidently, he said to some of them, your tax lady, she really hates the U.S. That's what President Trump said about the EU tax lady, a woman by the name of Margaret Vestager. She's the one that announced the fine yesterday. Can you believe it? And this is just one of many over the last several years. They slapped that, I think, $13 billion fine on Apple a few years back in Ireland, or it had to do with a new tax deal in Ireland. So Apple had to pay up all of these back taxes. Last year, they fined Google $2.7 billion. They've fined Facebook 110 million euro. They fined Microsoft $1 billion. Microsoft has fought back hard on it. But still, when the president of the United States comes into Europe and says, hey, your tax lady, she really hates the U.S. and Europe's, you know, they're like a foe to us with some of these trade practices. I happen to think that there's some leaders, as left-wing as they might be, at Google and Facebook and Microsoft and Apple that happen to agree with the president. They're constantly passing laws making it harder and harder and harder for U.S. tech firms to operate in Europe. Germany's passed a law to try to force Google to pay newspapers to link to them. The EU has enforced this right to be forgotten law. That if if something that goes way back in your history, if you don't like what comes up when someone Googles your name, Google has to change it or erase it. This woman, the tax lady, the one that President Trump called out. She's currently investigating Amazon. She wants to go after Google's parent company, Alphabet. This antitrust division of the European Union, this is a massive instrument of warfare for Europe in its trade war going on right now with the United States. Ambrose Evans Pritchard, he wrote a couple of years ago after the Apple decision, he says it operates, speaking of this EU antitrust arm, it operates outside the normal judicial control that we take for granted in a developed democracy. It says the U.S. Justice Department could never dream of acting in such a fashion. The U.S. Justice Department, it couldn't act this way. It couldn't behave this way. It says, known as the DG Comp, it acts as judge, jury, and executioner. This is the EU Antitrust Division. It acts as judge, jury, and executioner and can, in effect, impose fines large enough to constitute criminal sanctions, but without the due process protection of criminal law. There's no checks, in other words, no checks and balances. It's just this instrument of war, looking at it as far as trade wars are concerned. It's pretty amazing. The power of this union, this bureaucracy, this antitrust division. Well, the decision handed down yesterday, Google, as you know, they offer, they have their phones and such that come with the Google search app already included in it, and the EU says, well, that's illegal. I mean, if Google's opened up a lot of doors for cheaper phones and things of that nature, and again, say what you will about Google's business practices or Apple's or whatever, I'm not saying it's all perfect. But here comes the EU clamping down on these American companies, basically because they want their own tech companies to dominate across the continent. Evan Spritcher said, behind the shadow boxing is a strong suspicion that powerful forces in the EU are trying to use state aid probes to break the global dominance of America's technology giants, vainly hoping to nurture its own Silicon Valley. Behind a digital wall, Amazon, Facebook, Google, as well as Apple are all under fire, and Microsoft has fought an epic battle. I mean, these are some of America's biggest companies. And Donald Trump's gone on and on about the tariffs that have been in place for years. The Spectator had a piece just the other day. It says, and when they have the temerity to cheat us further in trade, then they have the temerity. It says, long before Trump, they set up tariffs. Speaking of Europe, the EU, they set up tariffs against us for so many things. If the average American knew how badly Europe had been ripping us off for decades with their tariffs, no one in this country would buy anything European again. We would say, as a matter of self-respect and personal pride, I no longer will buy anything but American, no matter what it costs. Now, this is not to suggest that the automatic response to this cheating, as the president says, is to then slap tariffs on goods coming into the United States. I mean, there's quite a few voices that, well, not that many, but some have said that's just slapping a tax on the American consumer. Free trade has certainly contributed to a lot of America's prosperity down through the years. In any event, I mean, the Spectator brings up a good point. And at the same time, if you think about some of the other statements that the president made, I mean, here they're clamping down the EU, this antitrust division. They're clamping down on what Google can or can't do, or Facebook or Amazon or Apple. And meanwhile, Germany has all of these questionable dealings with Russia, as President Trump pointed out. It's all of its questionable dealings with Gazprom. And President Trump comes into town and says, hey, we're supposed to be protecting you from Russia. Why are you giving billions of dollars to Russia This is if we're believing the news media, this is the Russian stooge coming into Europe saying that you're giving all this money to Russia when you should be helping us. You should be entering into good trade deals with us. I mean, we're funding this NATO operation, which is there evidently to protect you from Russia. How is this fair? You think anyone in the media, though, are going to be lining up to give the president any kind of credit for being spot on? Well, we have to step back from all of the fighting and the arguing and see how that this does factor into Bible prophecy. My father, he had an article back in 2008 talking about trade war. And in that piece, this is 10 years ago, he quoted from a Wall Street Journal article that said, Microsoft waved the white flag this week by dropping all appeals of the European Union's 2004 ruling against the software giant. Such defeats are a familiar sight, and not only in antitrust, Europe writes the rules for global business today across the board, unapologetically to the benefit of its own industry. American companies are learning they have little choice but to obey. You see, for Europe, it's Europe first. It's always been Europe first. And who does Donald Trump think he is to come along and say America's first as far as America is concerned? You can see where this is leading. This is human nature. But this is also Europe not used to, an American president who's putting America first above so many other interests. The Wall Street Journal piece said the result is a quiet but concerted war on American commerce, antitrust policy in Brussels, particularly high-tech firms, is a battlefield. It's been going on, like the Spectator says, for decades. And President Trump is exposing it. My father went on to say in that article, again, this is from 10 years ago, he said a vicious trade war is coming. America is going to be the tragic victim. That's what, you see, our people don't understand. They're cheering on the president right now, but eventually we're going to be the victim. There's some short-term gain to come from this resurgence, for sure. We've talked about the Jeroboam prophecies. Short term, you can see a boost. You can look at the economy. You can look at the stock market. In any event, my father said 10 years ago, however, American politicians are too divided to fight back. They just surrender. They just surrender to this oppression. Well, this was written before Donald Trump came along. Now there's some fight. But that's just going to make Europe, together with the Asian powerhouses, band together in an alliance against the United States. That's where it's headed. You see that in the headlines too. My father said that is if they even see the problem. Germany has been the European power that has most resisted the U.S. policy against Iran, especially the trade sanctions. That country is the real power behind this commerce war. It's all prophesied. A trade war, a commerce war. The Mart of Nations, Isaiah 23. Now, today, as I say, there's finally a White House occupant who's standing up to this aggressive attack in the fields of commerce and trade. But you look at so much of the country in the United States, so many Americans, I mean, they're dead set against this leader. They see him as an imposter. They see him as a Russian stooge. They're just believing everything that the media say about him. Trade war. After trade war, hot war. That's a lesson of history. Well, when we come back, we'll look more at the division. Again, the division within the United States and the ongoing vicious attack against President Donald Trump. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, you can send any comments to td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Freedom is one of the most sought-after ideals in human history. Man's search for freedom has taken him into the fiercest of protests, struggles, revolutions, civil wars, and even world wars. Today, in the midst of free societies, many continue to fight for what they perceive as ever greater freedoms. And yet, many of these same people are actively fighting against law. Few people understand that this war against law actually undermines true freedom. To learn more, request Gerald Flurry's booklet, No Freedom Without Law. In this free booklet, you will see what the Bible says about the latter-day spirit of rebellion and lawlessness that is now so common in our nations today. Also request America Under Attack. In this booklet, you will learn more about the spirit behind this attack on law. You'll see where this is leading. Both booklets are offered freely at no cost or obligation to you. Request No Freedom Without Law and America Under Attack. Email your request to td@kpcg.fm or visit thetrumpet.com. From the Philadelphia Church of God campus in Edstone, England, this is the Trumpet Daily Program with Stephen Flurry.
President is, and I want to say this as delicately as possible, syntactically challenged. He has a very difficult time getting from subject, object, predicate through a sentence. The sentences tend to explode in mid-flight. And for that reason, it sometimes is difficult to know what he intended to say. Now, I think as a matter of philosophy, if you can't say something, you can't think it. And the fact that a lot of what he says comes out in confused language indicates that there's confusion straight through. That said, it was quite clear, A, what he said in Helsinki, which is that he did not side with the U.S. intelligence agencies, and B, that someone, and I would love to have an analysis of what happened in the White House to bring this about, someone made him sit down and read a statement. He doesn't like to read. He doesn't like to read statements. But
that's MSNBC commentator George Will, who used to be considered a conservative, but there he is, expressing his hatred for the President of the United States. He is a blithering idiot, George Will thinks. So stupid. He can't talk. He doesn't like to read. So it's not just that he's dumb. He's Hitler, as we've heard. He's a traitor. He's a Russian operative. He's established concentration camps at the southern border. And on and on and on it goes. Completely unhinged. Total derangement. Do you really think that these media outlets, do you really think that they have America's interest at heart? Are they really trying to proclaim the truth? I had a clip, if we have time in the next segment, from Mr. Armstrong talking about the news, the nightly news. He was saying this back in the 60s, how it's just big business. It's entertainment. All of these shows, the 24-hour news cycles, all the talking heads, the panelists. It's just, what's the latest? Is it would or wouldn't? Did he say no or did he not say no? We can't be sure. But whatever it is, I mean, we are witnessing history. This day is going to go down in infamy, just like Pearl Harbor. We went through that, some of it anyway, the other day on Tuesday's program. Listen to, this is Anderson Cooper. Again, it's pretty much one and the same, whether it's the nightly news or the nightly news talking heads that switch over to the late night talk shows, the comedians. It's all the same. Here is Anderson Cooper on Stephen Colbert's show. I believe this was last night, clip 12.
You called Trump's performance disgraceful. I said the most disgraceful performance by an American president on the world stage in my lifetime, I think.
In his lifetime, I'm not sure how old he is, but that's Anderson Cooper exposing his historical ignorance. The worst, the most disgraceful performance by an American president in his life. Spectator, it had a piece yesterday. I forget who wrote this. It says it really is quite simple. Everyone is smart except Donald J. Trump. That's why they are all billionaires and all got elected president. Only Trump does not know what he is doing. Only Trump does not know how to negotiate with Vladimir Putin. Anderson Cooper knows how to stand up to Putin. The whole crowd at MSNBC does. All the journalists do. And then listen to this. They could not stand up to Matt Lauer at NBC. They could not stand up to Charlie Rose at CBS. They couldn't stand up to Mark Halperin at NBC. Nor up to Leon Weisalter at The New Republic. Nor Jan Wenner at Rolling Stone. Nor Michael Oreskes at NPR. At the New York Times or at the Associated Press, but oh, wow, can they ever stand up to Putin? Only Trump is incapable of negotiating with the Russian tyrant. Spectator says, remember the 4 years when Anderson Cooper was president of the United States? And before that, when the entire Washington Post editorial staff jointly were elected to be president? Remember? Neither do I. Neither do I. Everyone is dumb, or rather brilliant and smart, except for one. And so they go on and on. And it's not just about calling him a blithering idiot. There's really much more going on here. They're covering up the fact that the real election meddling story is not what was coming from Moscow in 2016. It was what was happening. It was what was happening in the deep state, at the FBI, at the DOJ, at the DNC, and with the support, with the 100% support coming from MSNBC, coming from CNN, coming from the New York Times, the Washington Post, the Los Angeles Times, coming from ABC, coming from CBS. That's what they're covering up. And it's ongoing. It's ongoing. Listen to Anderson Cooper. This is not on the comedian show. This is on his own show last night. And here's what he has to say about President Trump. Clip 13.
For the last 2 years, he has consistently mischaracterized, questioned, or outright rejected the intelligence community's assessment and later the Senate Intelligence Committee's bipartisan conclusion that Russia meddled in the election with the goal of making him Donald Trump president.
Okay, so from the beginning, the premise on which everything that they believe is built is the fact that the Russians meddled, that Vladimir Putin, he was coordinating it, that he wanted Donald Trump to win, and this is the final nail in the coffin of President Donald Trump. The Trump administration colluded with him. They colluded with the Russians. Anderson Cooper there says, for 2 years, he's consistently rejected the intel community's assessment. The intel community, all of the agencies that were working to bring him down, have concluded that Vladimir Putin wanted Donald Trump to win the 2016 election. And Cooper throws out there at the end that even a bipartisan Senate Intelligence Committee said as much. I guess that was from a few months ago. The House intel community disagrees. But that's okay. They'll go and find just what they want to confirm what they've believed from the beginning, that he colluded with the Russians. And that's why he was put in an impossible position on Monday. Okay, so Vladimir Putin is a dictator. He's a tyrant. He jails journalists. He assassinates his political opponents. But there he is. There he is having a discussion with the leader of Russia, President Trump, that is. And then the reporter with the big gotcha question saying, well, do you believe your intelligence community or do you believe Vladimir Putin? And that set off the eruption. And it continues. Like he's supposed to get up there and say, I heartily agree with the intel community. The intel community has been spreading all this false information. And the more and more, just like my father writes, the more and more is revealed, the more and more we see just how much lawless behavior was going on. I mentioned that tweet from John Brennan the other day. This is the former CIA director. This is the one Obama appointed. This is the one that voted communist in 1976. This is the one that didn't want the CIA referring to any kind of terrorist attack being sponsored by Islam or a jihadist. We've got to remove that language. They're just murderers. It has nothing to do with Islam. And jihad actually is a holy word. So here is John Brennan. He's accusing the president of the United States of being a traitor. And he had more to say last night on MSNBC. Here's clip 14.
And I know how capable and sophisticated and cunning the Russians are, as well as how clever Mr. Putin is as a trained KGB officer. And 2 hours with Donald Trump, I have real questions about that. And why did he not trust John Bolton and Mike Pompeo and John Kelly to be in that meeting? When he was there with his translator, was that translator excused? Did he pass written notes to Mr. Putin and to the Russian translator so that our translator would not see it? I don't know, but there's something that is very, very puzzling about this.
Did he pass written notes to Putin and to the Russian translator so that our translator would not see it? That's the former CIA director. Who they cannot trust President Trump to have a private discussion with anyone. That's really, in their heart of hearts, it's what they believe. He's the president of the United States attending a summit, talking with a world leader, and then coming out for 45 minutes or whatever it was for the press conference, giving the reporters all the opportunity they want to ask questions. But there's something puzzling about it. It reminds me of what Comey went on and on and on with just a few months ago. I don't know if it happened, but it could have. Well, what could have happened inside of this meeting? What could he have said? Is it possible that he gave Vladimir Putin a note and that our translator did not see the note? I don't know if that happened, but it's possible. That's the sort of thing that passes for expert analysis on MSNBC and CNN. And then they go on the comedian shows and joke about it. And they think that Donald Trump is the lunatic. They think he's the dumb guy. They think he's the idiot. They think he's dangerous. How does this get resolved? How does the American family come together again? Here's John Brennan. This is why he's concerned. Clip 15.
And I am concerned because I know how manipulative the Russians are and Mr. Putin is. And as the special counsel's investigation continues to go forward, we are going to find out the facts as Bob Mueller uncovers them about whether or not there were individuals that were very close to Mr. Trump and in the campaign who were actively abetting and aiding the Russian efforts to interfere in that election.
What?
2 years, and they're still holding out hope that Bob Mueller is going to find something. It's not just about you need to stand up to Putin and confront him about his meddling. The questions, the reaction, it all springs from this position. that the Trump administration is colluding with Vladimir Putin and the Russians. And all of this is intended to cover up the real collusion and the real meddling that was going on and that is still going on. Cheryl Atkinson, this piece I read from the other day, following the IG report from back in June, she said the earth-shattering finding on Strzok, Peter Strzok, by the Inspector General confirms a citizenry's worst fears. A high-ranking government intel official allegedly conspired to affect the outcome of a U.S. presidential election. See, the ones on the radical left side, they're constantly beating this drum as loudly as they can. And it's all intended to cover up the truth about what is really, really the greatest illicit meddling in a U.S. election in the history of the United States. That's the way Conrad Black put it. I'll come to that here in just a second. Strzok's testimony happened even as Donald Trump was in the midst of this trip. The day after his testimony, this was in a closed session. It wasn't for public consumption, but judging by some of the reports coming out, Lisa Page, she's the friend that Peter Strzok texted to. Evidently, judging by reports, she was quite a bit more forthright and honest. What did you mean by this or that? What did Strzok mean by we'll stop him? He meant exactly what he said. We are going to stop him. We're going to do what we can to stop him. Hopefully they'll have a public hearing with her down the road. And if she did fess up, well, then good for her. That's the cover-up, though. That's the thing. This is the collusion. This is the election meddling. And so Donald Trump's supposed to get up at this press conference on Monday, leave aside that he was on foreign soil and leave aside that he was standing next to a murderous thug. But who had a lot more success? It didn't quite work, though. That's the amazing part of this story, too. But, I mean, really, the Russian meddling, a few Facebook pages and such that people did, even if they did hack into the DNC server, why didn't the DNC come forward and hand it all over to the FBI? Those are questions that a lot of people are still holding on to, and rightfully so. I mean, if you're a victim, if you've had your information stolen, if you've had things taken from your server, at least give the server over to the investigators that are trying to get to the bottom of it. As it was all handled by a third party, and then you have to take the third party's word for it. Of course all the intelligence community, of course they all came together and concluded that Vladimir Putin wanted Donald Trump to win. Because they all wanted Hillary Clinton to win. And so it fits right in line with their narrative, which they've maintained from the very beginning. One more exchange here. This is Katie Tour, firstly, asking John Brennan a question about that press conference that then-candidate Trump had back in July of 2016, where he talked about Russia, that they should hack in and try to find those 30,000 emails that went missing. This is clip 16.
Why did July 27th, 2016, that press conference where he asked Russia to hack into Hillary Clinton's emails, why did that raise so many red flags?
Well, because it was basically overt collusion, encouraging the Russians to try to find her emails. And so we see, you know, collusion in plain sight. Now the question is whether the things that are going on behind the scenes that may have, in fact, helped Mr. Trump get elected.
That's the former CIA director, Obama CIA director, saying that because, and you remember it probably, some of you, candidate Trump, he has no power in office. He's running for office. He's joking at a campaign rally. He's saying that, hey, Russia, if you're listening, I hope you're able to find the 30,000 emails. And in the minds of all of Donald Trump's critics, his opponents, That was overt collusion. You just heard him. He still believes it was. I went back this morning and saw the NBC report following that statement that Donald Trump made. I think NBC said, this is a story that's gained worldwide attention. I mean, this was the big news. The hysterical reaction 2 years ago, July of 2016. And notice there, he makes a passing comment when he has no power. He's just a businessman, a billionaire businessman at that. But he has no position of office. He has no connections to Russia or the CIA or anyone at the DOJ. He says, hey, Russia, if you're listening, I hope you can find those 30,000 emails. And in John Brennan's mind, that is overt collusion. But when Peter Strzok says, we'll stop him, and Peter Strzok is in a position of influence, and Peter Strzok is in a position where he's heading up the investigation against Donald Trump, Trump-Russian collusion, then we're supposed to think that we'll stop him doesn't mean we'll stop him. There's nothing there. There's no there in that text coming from the lead investigator. This is the way they think. Hillary can delete 30,000 emails with BleachBit and the servers. She can bleach away all of that, even when she's under investigation. But the real problem, the real evil here, the real danger is Donald Trump got up at a press conference and said, hey, Russia, if you're listening, maybe you can get those 30,000 emails. It's all part of the cover-up, and it continues to all the hysteria that you see this week. And it's incredible to think that they're talking about collusion, that they're talking about all of these things, how the election was meddled, and they're guilty of all of it. It's like 1,000 times over. I got this piece a while back. A couple of you listeners sent it to me a few weeks ago. I've just kind of been sitting on it, but this was an editorial or a column, I guess, an op-ed at the Washington Times about America really having a Manchurian candidate in the White House, but it's not the one who's there at present. And listen to this. This is by Todd Wood. It's a pretty good summation of what happened or has happened over the past decade. He says, in the short year and a half that President Trump has been in office, he has put in place policy that has mitigated the damage that President Obama inflicted on our national security and on our allies. The speed with which Trump has been able to turn things around points to the diabolical depths the Obama administration went to in order to undermine our national strength and way of life. All Trump had to do was stop doing things that hurt America. He says here, the results are plain as day. Here are facts. President Obama's, he's on his African tour talking about facts. Saying how that politicians are out there lying today. And that people won't believe facts. Todd Wood says here how it's going to take decades for so much of this damage brought on by the Obama administration to be undone. He says, think about it for a moment. If you wanted peace in the Middle East, why would you throw away the trillions of dollars spent, as well as the lives of thousands of American souls, by irresponsibly pulling out all American troops from Iraq? He says, no matter your thoughts on starting the war, pulling out was an irresponsible thing to do. We still have troops in Germany. We still have troops in Korea and Japan. Why? He asks. They're there for stability, to maintain order. It says, as Colin Powell said, we broke it, now we own it. It was a given that instability would follow the forced withdrawal. When you combine this act with the reality that Obama never really did try to defeat the Islamic State, what conclusion can you come up with? Trump defeated them in a few months. The conclusion is obvious. Obama really didn't want to destroy them. Why did Obama and Hillary take down Muammar Gaddafi, who had already given up his nuclear weapons? Was it to destabilize Libya, where ISIS could gain another foothold? Why did Obama help install the Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt? What was the agenda behind the so-called Arab Spring? I mean, these things don't make sense. My father brings this out in America Under Attack, but this is just another version of that. They don't make sense. They run contrary to decades of American policy. It says, however, the coup de grace of anti-American activity was the JCPOA, or, to say it another way, the agreement to give Iran everything it wanted, including nuclear weapons and money, lots of money, which it immediately used to further destabilize the region and existentially threaten the only democracy in the Middle East, Israel. I had another couple stories I didn't bring down here with me this morning in my stack of news about how that since the JCPOA was agreed to 2015, Iran's, it's something like it's doubled the size of its uranium. It's really putting the pressure on the European nations, dangling that as a threat. If you don't stand against Donald Trump, who pulled out back in May, I guess it was, if you don't stand up to President Trump, we're going to start refining that uranium and we're going to accelerate the process here. And then all of the billions, the tens of billions, as this little op-ed brings out, to destabilize the Middle East and to threaten Israel. He says, to take it a step further, why didn't Obama support the opposition against the mullahs in 2009 when there was an obvious chance for regime change in Iran? Why didn't Obama confront Bashar Assad's chemical weapons use? Why? If he's wanting to help bring stability to the region, why this approach in Libya or Egypt or Syria or Iran? It says here, finally, I won't go into why Obama ran up more debt for the United States than all previous presidents combined. I won't ask why he weakened our armed forces. Why did he hollow out the military? Why did he underfund the military? I won't ask, he says, why he used tyrannical policies, like using the agencies of the federal government, to go after his political opposition. I won't ask why he politicized our security apparatus in an attempt to frame President Trump. Why? Why did he politicize all of these government agencies? Why did he target conservative groups? Why did he go after Donald Trump, even as a candidate? Why did he implant informants? Why did he spy? What about the dossier? What about the echo chamber? What about the three different versions of the dossier? What about the tarmac meeting? What about the exoneration letter before the investigation was even completed? What about all these things? And we're supposed to just be up in arms over the fact that there were 10 or 12 Russian hackers that did something that was so inconsequential that Rod Rosenstein himself, 1 week ago, said there were no Americans involved and that it did not influence the election. It didn't sway the election one way or the other. This after 2 years of investigations, a counterintelligence investigation, and now, of course, the Mueller probe. But they won't give it up. They won't let it go. And that's why they were waiting with bated breath on Monday. As soon as Trump walked out into that press room, along with Vladimir Putin, they were going to be outraged no matter what he said. They're not really in the interest of informing the American people or reporting the truth. It's all agenda-driven. And so Anderson Cooper, when coming out of a live shot right there at the press conference, He says, as he said to the comedian the other night, it's just the first thing that came to my mind. This was the most disgraceful performance I've seen from a U.S. president in my lifetime. And that's the news for tonight. Conrad Black, I mentioned him a moment ago. He says here in his piece at American Greatness, speaking of the radical left, speaking of this Manchurian candidate that was in the White House for 8 years, or as Todd Wood brings out in his piece, the fox in the hen house, it went on for so long and the damage that's been done. And now little by little, it's being exposed. Conrad Black says they are trying to cover up the greatest illicit meddling in an American election in history. The meddling by American intelligence agencies. And you see all of this going on, and more of the facts are being revealed. And President Trump is supposed to get up there on Monday and say, hey, our American intelligence agencies, I know they've unanimously said that Putin meddled and that he wanted me to win. And I really stand behind them. I'm really proud of their work. I couldn't be happier with the DOJ and with the FBI. I mean, these institutions, these agencies, they are corrupt at the top. And this is what he's trying to clean up. Black says, in their desperation, since the defeat of the candidate they covertly supported, who would have covered it up for them, they have been trying to maintain the fraud of collusion and conflate it with the trivial and routine interventions of some Russian operatives in the 2016 election, trying to cover it up with this trivia. John Brennan talking about, I know the Russians. Yes, this is why I'm concerned. I know how manipulative they are. Right. He was in the top position at the CIA from 2013 to the end of the Obama administration. And all through that time, people were sounding the alarm. The Russians are meddling. The Russians are meddling. We got to watch out for the Russians. And they did nothing. In fact, they were told to stand down at the White House. The Obama administration said, stand down. And so here he is on Monday, and in the minds of the self-righteous media types, the president of the United States, he's supposed to come out there and get right in Vladimir Putin's face and say, you meddled in our election. They didn't do what he wanted, or rather, he didn't do what they wanted him to do. And it set off this furious response. Conrad Black says here at the end, Trump could have handled things better in Helsinki and should not have provoked a clarification from National Intelligence Director Dan Coats. But fundamentally, he's right, and he will win. Fundamentally, he's right, and in the end, he will win. He's going up against a lot. But he's exposing a lot in the process. He, like my father says in Great Again, he's done a really good job of identifying some of the problems, and he's not afraid to call them out. Perhaps he could have called out Vladimir Putin more strongly, but do you do that while at the same time saying, yeah, the intel agencies, they've done a fantastic job in trying to bring me down? It's something that he's fundamentally right about, and he's going to win in the end. When we come back, I'm looking at the clock. We don't have a whole lot of time left, but we'll tie up today's show with a few additional thoughts. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, you can send comments to td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is The Trumpet Daily. Don't forget to visit our website at thetrumpet.com. every day, thetrumpet.com will help you understand your world by analyzing today's headlines under the clear light of Bible prophecy. Log on to thetrumpet.com and sign up for our daily Trumpet Brief email and subscribe to The Trumpet magazine. From the Philadelphia Church of God campus in Edstone, England, this is The Trumpet Daily Program with Stephen Flurry.
Last week, in one of our studies, we made the point about how important it is to visit monuments or historical sites. You'll recall David McCullough talking about the importance of that and really getting our children, our young people, taking them to those impressive sites. And in the process of that study, or at least in gathering the research, we ran across this coworker letter from 1947. This is early on there at the start of Ambassador College. And Mr. Armstrong's talking about, or actually it might have been later than that. I think he's referring back to when Ambassador College started. But in this article here, he's talking about those students that went over to the British campus and just how educational that was for the young people. We're in the midst of our youth camps now, or at least we're about to start one here. And the one in the United States has been going on now for a week. But here's Mr. Armstrong writing to members of the church and coworkers saying a one-year term at what would become Ambassador College in Europe would offer, this was 47 actually, because he was looking for a college campus in Switzerland to begin with, and then eventually it became Brickett Wood, or the focus moved to the UK. But already in his mind in 1947, he was thinking about the many benefits of taking a year in the overseas campus. He said further on, students over there would take trips every 6 weeks or 2 months to one of the nearby European capitals or educational centers, Paris, Milan, Munich, Zurich, Rome, many of them closer to Lugano than San Francisco is from Pasadena. Pointing out the obvious here, geographically, you can get to places all over Europe in just 30 or 40 minutes of flying. There would, he says here, there they would have a planned guided tour with perhaps a day or two or three in some of the great libraries of Europe in special and independent research, tours through the great European museums, galleries. We're planning this right now for our camp here at Edstone for all of the young people to see Westminster Abbey, and then also the National Art Gallery there at Trafalgar Square. Lots to see, lots of history, and all in such close proximity. It says here, finally, before graduation, the students would be conducted on a tour of the Holy Land. Now, let me mention one most important consideration. Most people do not realize this. The circumstances of my life have been such that I have come to learn it. He says, one receives education from travel, just as much, if not more, than from books. You need both. But travel, as he says here, is broadening. It is experience, and experience is life. It gives one assurance, confidence, poise. It adds that quality of education which helps a man go out and accomplish things. And of what use is education unless it's used? And that's one thing that we have, as I said last week, that we've attempted to do here with so many of our excursions, particularly in the last couple years, whether it's, you know, seeing Mozart's home down in Austria or visiting the National Art Gallery, as I say. We're doing some research on that now so that we can hopefully help our campers understand or know going in what to look for. We've done that before with the British Museum. Blenheim Palace, where Churchill was born. We saw the Chartwell home just a couple of weeks ago. The Normandy beaches. We visited that a little over a year ago and did quite a lot of research in the lead up to it. But then you get out and you see it, or as Mr. Armstrong says, you experience it. And what a difference. He says, just plain book learning alone is not real education. doesn't properly fit a man to or make him a success. Frankly, I feel that this 1 year of education in Europe will at least double the actual value of the education each student receives. Indeed. How much more impactful can an excursion be if you really do if you put in the time? This is me now commenting on what Mr. Armstrong said. If you put in the time in the classroom, and then if you're able to go out on an excursion, whether it's an extended stay at a college campus or just an opportunity to see a historical site or monument. He says, I've consulted three experienced educators of high standing. All three are emphatic in saying the addition of the European institution would very greatly increase the practical educational value to the students and fit them for greater accomplishment in life. These are some of the many benefits of a godly education, a well-rounded, balanced education, which is what you get at both college campuses, the headquarters campus in Edmond, Oklahoma, and the Edstone campus here in the West Midlands in the UK. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. We thank you for joining us on today's program, and I'll look forward to meeting up with you again on tomorrow's show.